therefore here's the vote on it. I'm going to vote. I don't know how I'm going to vote on it.
The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Apologize for the delay. Fortunately, we have an extra hour, so we won't have to be in quite the hurry we've been in the past. I'm going to open a work session on... I'm sorry, before we open a work session, take that back. Close the work session on whatever I opened it on. Let me just announce that we're going to carry over 3613, House Bill 3613, and we are going to not hear House Bill 2891 and House Bill 2860. All right, Zach, now are we prepared to open a work session? Public hearing on. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3158. Zach.
House Bill 3158 requires the Department of Transportation to study the importance of interstate bridges as part of the transportation system.
As many of you know, this bill has been discussed at some length, but I'm thinking that we probably should move this to another committee. Hold on just a moment.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
What bills were we not hearing? 2860 and what was the other one?
2891 and 2860.
Okay. Thank you.
We're in a public hearing on 3158.
We have several people signed up for this. We're going to have a two-minute limit on the testimony. The two people who are signed up first are Joe Courtwright and Mara Gross. If you could come up. You have a very familiar look. I think we've seen you before on this.
A couple of times. Co-Chair Reed, I feel a bit awkward in being here today on this because it appears that you may have a destination in mind for this, but let me just briefly comment on the subject of studying bridges, which is the subject of 3158. A proposal has been made, as you all know, for the Columbia River Crossing. It has been studied extensively. You had an independent review panel report submitted, prepared by the governors. It's got a very excellent and detailed set of concerns and criticisms. It was represented to you in a hearing on H.1.2 that the independent review panel essentially gave a clean bill of health to the financial aspects of the Columbia River crossing. In fact, the wording used and the conclusion of that report was far different. It really described the financial plan for the forecasts for the Columbia River crossing as not accurate enough, having significant risks that the numbers would be wrong, questioning the reliability of the cost and schedule outputs, and calling the credibility of the estimates problematic. So I think the lesson here is if we do embark on studies of bridges, it would be well to carefully look and examine the findings of those studies and apply them when we make decisions about bridges. And I have a memorandum that I'd like to distribute to members of the committee that responds to some of the comments that were made about the Columbia River Crossing study.
Thank you. Are you finished?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Gross.
Thank you. Chair Spence and Reed, members of the committee, my name is Mara Gross, Policy Director at Coalition for a Livable Future. We've been following the Columbia River Crossing for several years now. My understanding was that House Bill 3158 was going to be amended regarding language on legislative oversight of the Columbia River Crossing, and haven't seen language to that effect. I'm not sure what the status of that is. So I feel like I'm testifying a little bit significantly on a phantom bill right now. So just speaking very briefly is that I really appreciate the legislature's interest in hearing a substantive bill on the Columbia River Crossing and taking a more active role. The strongest lever that the legislature has is not simply a committee, but financial oversight, control of the finances. And there's several things the legislature can do to assert its role. One is requiring a financing plan that provides for phased construction of different elements of the project that can stand on their own. Another is that require that funding be approved by the legislature. And the third is to find out if the current plan is financially viable by requiring an investment grade analysis, as Joe Courtwright has testified in the past. And simply, there are solutions to the issues on I-5. There are real issues there. And we need to evaluate how to do this project in a reasonable budget in ways that actually improve our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thanks. And I apologize. I am not, when I look at my loaded bills and at the paper put before me, I am not seeing text of an amend. I'm not seeing a dash amendment or what I think is going to be 3158. Is there a bill that I should be looking at that has the content that we're actually talking about?
Just 3158.
Okay, no amendments?
None.
There's a dash 3 in our folder. I've got a dash 3 in front of me, dated April 18th.
Yeah, that's a good amendment.
I stand corrected, there's an amendment, but
okay.
For public hearing, want to address either?
I still want to ask my question.
Please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corey, when they were, when they, independent review panel was evaluating it, how broad or narrowed were the set of questions that they were charged to ask? Were they charged to evaluate other meaningfully different options, and or were they, did they evaluate the overall need for, and the case for the stated need of the project as it is?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, my understanding, having attended the independent review panels, they were tasked with evaluating the implementation of the locally preferred alternative. They were not asked to review the process by which the locally preferred alternative was chosen or the overall need for the project.
All right, that's helpful. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much. That's all the folks I have signed up for this. I almost hesitate to ask if anyone else wants to be heard. Seeing there is one person, why don't you come up?
Co-chairs, committee, my name is Jim Howell. I just have a question. From what I see, this is just to requires the Department of Transportation to study the importance of interstate bridges as part of transportation system. Does this include the railroad bridges? Does this include the need for passenger rail bridges? I just wondering what's all involved here, if this is the extent of this bill. Just as a citizen, I'm curious.
That's a good question. Is there anyone that wants to answer before I take a shot at it? The concept here is to allow this vehicle to remain intact should this bill be moved on to another committee, while this committee holds further hearings on this exact issue. That process is still in the context of discussion, and if it results in something that's worthy, there may be amendments suggested in another committee. So, as you so correctly point out, this is a broad bill, and could end up going nowhere. But if this committee does its job appropriately, and if folks appearing before it are adequately armed with facts, this bill may see further further amendments. So, as you say, it's not. In my opinion, ready for anything but to be moved to another committee, which is what I hope happens.
Thank you.
Further thoughts, further questions for this gentleman? Thank you very much. Now, is there anyone else that would like to be heard? See no one? Close the public hearing on House Bill 3158 and open a work session on House Bill 3158.
Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3158 be passed to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation.
It's been moved that House Bill 3158 pass to, without recommendation, to the
Joint
Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Representative Widener.
Mr. Chair,
I'm just looking, trying to see the dash three amendments, but it's tough to move these when we have amendments here that we haven't got a chance to read, and I'm seeing that with a lot of them. And shown up this morning, a lot of the bills that we're getting ready to work, and not having time to thoroughly vet everything. I get a little leery about voting for things that we haven't got to vet here seriously ourselves.
Thank you, Representative Widener. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, point of, I guess, question. If we, so there is a dash three amendment. If this motion is successful, is then a motion to move the dash three amendments out of order? Or does it remain in order?
I think it's out of order, Representative.
Okay. So I'm gonna say a few things. I think from what you're saying, I think I understand from, you know, all the conversations that this bill is meant to use the vehicle of Better Ways and Means to explore possibly some sort of oversight committee of the project. I would hope that this committee would weigh in and say something about what that might look like. I understand that some proponents of the project might think there's a few people on this committee are the last people they'd want to weigh in on what that might look like, but I think that's why they should be involved. I am, as I've communicated to you, Mr. Chair, open to the idea of some sort of decision-making mechanism. What I will say now, in the hopes that it becomes that, and to say why I am voting no on this unless we can conversate about and consider amendments here, is that if it is oversight of the currently prehatched project without any meaningful lever to seriously consider other options or consider this project alongside other transportation priorities in the state, then I think it will be an oversight board of limited utility. So far, the people who have really looked at this in our state have been limited to the Metro Council and Portland City Council, if you're looking at like elected officials. And they don't have the same interests as many members of our chamber around the state in terms of prioritization of projects. It's reasonable for somebody to say, hey, listen, this is going to go through my district or a nearby district. I'd love to have it happen. But for somebody that has one of the bridges, one of the 25 bridges that has been identified as structurally unsound, of which the current bridge is not one of those 25, I could imagine them having a different set of priority. So I would hope that we would have a mechanism and send a signal legislatively of fiscal sideboards, reviewing options and not merely making sure that the nails are put in right on the current decision, and third, putting in the context of other priorities. Given that, and that the current version of 3158 doesn't contemplate any of those questions, I got to be a no on moving it to a committee that will obviate any chance for any policy committee to ever look at it. It's not going to go to a policy committee. It'll go to Ways and Means, and it'll dodge the Senate, and it'll come straight to the floor. And the only thing that's going to happen is vote counting. And I think there has to actually be policy analysis on this. It's critically important, the biggest project we've ever done, and I appreciate very much the chair's desire to find a solution, and that is a genuine appreciation, and I hope that we look deeply and not casually. I'll be a no on this for what it's worth.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Any other discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who submitted the dash threes?
I did. I'm pretty sure that's the one I submitted.
Yes. You want to help for the discussion?
Want to have a, did you find them in here? Are they in there? They're in the system. Representative Smith, we could move to adopt those amendments.
There's a motion on the floor, Mr. Chair.
And a motion to adopt an amendment supersedes that as well.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I don't think that's true.
Well, why don't we take a little recess and talk to the clerk and find out what the answer is. We're in recess. Procedure is to allow a motion if there is one to be made. Do I hear a motion? Representative Smith.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3158.
Representative Reed has moved the...
Representative Smith.
I'm sorry, Representative Smith.
Representative Reed. Sounds great.
Sorry, Representative Smith. Representative Smith has moved the dash three amendments to House Bill 3158. Is there discussion? Representative Widener.
Mr. Chair, back to my original statement. I would appreciate it if we could carry this over till Wednesday to give us some time to go through. I like a lot of things in the dash three amendments. It actually focuses on the financial side of things very heavily. But I haven't got a chance to fully vet this, so if we could carry it over to Wednesday, I would much appreciate it. But if it's the committee's will to move it now, I would be supporting the dash threes.
President Smith.
Yeah, just to explain, we just got these amendments today. I think everybody, my staff, I asked my staff about it just now, and he did say, through the wonders of modern whatever, and he did say he'd sent it to every member of the committee. I apologize that we're just getting it. It's not attempting to do anything particularly controversial. It's attempting to limit us spending more than $5 million on the current project until we have an investment-grade financial analysis. It is asking that the state treasurer shall either themselves or choose somebody to prepare an analysis on the on if the toll money is going to actually do what we think it's going to do, pay for this project, so that we're not left on the hook for the overage. You know, $2 or $3 or $3.5 billion project we might be able to cover, but if this gets up to $8, $9, $10, it's that's fiscal suicide. It then asks for. For a report by October 2012 so that we can analyze further. I would be open to even amendments of this amendment and communicated with the proponents of the project on Friday by way of email. I'm not sure if you were able to get back or not. I wasn't able to see that anybody had gotten back to see if there was anything that this policy committee, before it goes to the budget committee, anything this policy committee can agree on, roughly speaking, to put some sideboards on, at least the finances, if not to review some other options. The other piece that it does is ask for a plan for phasing. One of the critiques of this is that we've taken a long time getting here. And I think had we had a plan that said, well, we know we need to do this part of it, so let's do that part. And let's get it done, put people to work right now, start solving some of the objectives, phasing the other elements to see if we still need them, more fiscally responsible, better for putting people to work sooner, and better for planning. So that's what this amendment hopes to do. I'm eminently open to carrying it over so people can review it further till Wednesday, even eminently open to further amendments. What I hope we won't do is I would prefer that we'd move this instead of essentially a blank bill to a non-policy committee in Ways and Means, where we will hope good things happen.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
yes,
does everybody have a copy of the dash threes?
Does anyone not have a copy of the dash threes?
Everybody should have two.
Here's what they do, Representative Lindsay. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, why do we have two copies?
Because my staff sent one, and the committee administrator sent one around.
I only have one that I just received about 3 minutes ago.
All right. So Alex may be wrong. He may have missed a few people, but hopefully your staff received from my staff one of them. I didn't see it until I sat here, but it does pretty faithfully go through the request.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Widener.
I'm just kind of curious, because Co-Chair Reed just got them, but Zach had them in a folder, so I'm just wondering how long
Zach's
had them.
No, Zach passes them out once we made the motion, but Alex told me that he would set them out beforehand.
So the chairs had no knowledge before 3 minutes ago when this came up?
President Widener, I don't have, I don't know when I got the dash threes. I'm having... I think I received them sometime this morning, but I'd have to go back and check. It may have been earlier. Let me just say a couple of things in response to Representative Smith's remarks and also the dash threes. First, this bridge project has to be one of the most important and complex projects facing the state of Oregon in its history, and it deserves a great deal of attention. And this legislative body needs to weigh in carefully and cautiously and with due regard toward the complexities of the device and the challenges before us. I don't see the dash threes as being bad. I just think they need much more thought, and that's what Co-Chair Reed and I hope will be, that we hope we'll have that opportunity to give it that kind of thought over the next month or so. It is our hope that we can have a series of meetings that will give everybody an opportunity to address the very important issues that are reflected in the Dash 3s and also, of course, House Bill 3158. I will not be supporting the Dash 3s, but I will be working toward a goal which will probably incorporate many of those concepts in one way or another. There are a number of devices available to us after today. Is there further discussion? President Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the comments that you've just made, describing your hope or intent that there be continued discussions about this, and listening very carefully to your comments about moving forward cautiously and about the complexity of the project, even though we tend to call it sometimes the bridge project, it's so much more than a single bridge. There were ideas presented in public testimony before us that there are other ideas for other bridges. We heard testimony that the bridge itself is actually a minority of the funding part of this project, that there is a lot that goes toward interchanges and other sorts of things. Given that, and your interest in having continued discussion, I really appreciate that perspective on how to proceed.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk call the roll on the Dash 3s?
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
No.
Representative Lindsay?
No.
Co-Chair Beyer?
No.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Chair Reed?
No.
Chair Bent?
No.
So do we win?
Motion fails. I think that brings us back to your motion, Co-Chair Reed. And if I recall, the motion was to pass House Bill 3158 without recommendation to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And since some time has passed, is there discussion? Representative White.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that we're moving it without recommendation. It has a pretty broad relating to clause, and we're putting this in the hands of other legislators to work on and essentially do whatever they want to or need at this point without us in this committee having any say over this project whatsoever. And I worry that we may be cutting people out of the system that actually may have some very good ideas that could save the state tremendous amounts of money. And I hope that that doesn't happen when it moves on. I hope that everybody is allowed to come to the table and bring their ideas and proposals before we continue on this project too much further, because I know last session and this session being in this committee, the only project that's ever been brought to me is replacing the I-5 bridge with the mega bridge. And I would like to see some other options that are brought that would actually show us some impacts of the traffic changes and everything else. So with that, also support it going on to the next committee, not wholeheartedly, though.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, as I stated, but I'll say more because it's fun. As a process matter, the policy thing needs to be figured out by policy committee. I think that general idea is supported by 8 people on that committee. I don't want to speak for you, but that's my hunch on most issues. This is the kind of thing that also deserves airing in a Senate policy committee. By saying it to Ways and Means, everybody in this room knows we'll never have that. Now, we might, and I'm holding and very much appreciating what the chair said, that we'll continue to have hearings on it, and hope very much that that we will be really diligent about that. The question before us is not bridge or no bridge. the question before us is, what sort of project makes sense in light of the objectives we want to fulfill and in light of our other transportation priorities? I hope that as we move forward and that we will work very hard with Ways and Means to make sure that that's the kind of thing we do if we do anything with this bill at all, and that we have not just ex post, after the fact, irrelevant oversight, but in advance, application of judgment. I will, for process reasons, be voting no on this. Hope to find something that I can vote yes on and that other members can vote yes on. And or something else I wanted to say that I forgot.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk call the roll.
Representative Schmidt.
Nope.
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Lindsay.
Aye.
Representative Weiser.
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Chair Reed.
Aye.
Chair Vance.
Aye. With that, I'm going to close the work session on 3158. And I think, Zach, we should go to the HB 2523. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Then I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2523. And, colleagues, we have some amendments to this bill. I may remind all of you that 2523, 2208, and 2414 are the so-called DESE bills. And I think, yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I think Director McCabe is here, or was, to speak on that. And I might, while he's coming up, make a comment on one of the other bills. Or well, we can wait until we get to that one, 2208. But
right.
Director McCabe, sir.
Pretty worthwhile. Is Chris here?
We need him. Sure, is Helen.
Yeah, we'll go to Director. Director. Welcome.
Co-Chair Benz, member of the committee. For the record, I'm Tim McCabe, Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. With me is Paul Grove, my legislative counsel, so I'm going to have Paul discuss the amendments.
Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove. I am with Business Oregon, and the amendments before you today to House Bill 2523, the -3 amendments, come out of the work from a work group that had been established, and in particular, the standards outlined in the -3 amendments build upon work that had been done when Director McCabe was in the governor's office working with the Department of Energy to establish a baseline with respect to increased levels of employment around the manufacturing Betsy and ensuring the financial viability of prospective projects. What we've done is added some language that in essence codifies the work that we currently do around the manufacturing Betsy, and that includes specifying or outlining minimum levels of employment that are specific to industry standards and in relationship to the credit. But then also building upon that and talking about the compensation paid and the benefits provided to the employees of an applicant to ensure that they meet or exceed the national average for comparable employment. And again, as you can see before you, under 5A and B, looking at the indicators of financial viability and the likelihood of long-term operation and success of the facility. That's something that we undertake in our due diligence process, and again, are outlining it here in statute. And then lastly, on number 7, entering into a performance agreement with the applicant at the time of certification, and this again contains conditions around the minimum level of employment, the wages that the applicant must meet, and also contains clawback provisions if the applicant does not meet those requirements. And that, I believe, sums up the -3 amendments.
Thank you. Now, we have we also have some -4 amendments. Are those the department's amendments?
The Chair Bentz, members of the committee, those were reflective of the initial draft that we had worked on. The distinction being in sub-3, the standards requiring the minimum levels of employment. The departments are the -3s that we're looking at right now in front of us.
And perhaps you could share with us the difference, just to summarize, because the amendments do come in rather, they're late, and so, I mean, they're late, but that's normal, but maybe you could go ahead and tell us the difference.
Chair Benz, members of the committee, without the benefit of the dashboard in front of me, I believe that the distinction is on line two through four, where we're talking about the minimum levels of increased employment. The dash four, I believe, talks about the minimum levels of increased employment being proportionate to the amount of the credit allowed. With respect to the manufacturing, Betsy, the amount of the credit allowed is with respect to the capital investment, and we're trying to be clear here that the minimum levels of employment are proportionate to the industry standards and the credit.
Thank you. Are there questions? Because it's been a while since we've taken up this particular part of the Betsy, it might be worthwhile for the director to state why the device works, why it helps the state of Oregon, and in general, why you think we're the better for the amount of money that it's anticipated maybe, well, just has been spent. And I'm particularly interested in you pointing out what, in your opinion, we receive for the investment we're making. Be as general as you like, but it'd be a good kind of refresher course as we work our way into the next two parts of the device.
Sure. Co-Chair Benz, member of the committee, I will talk more in generalities, but what we receive is we're working with a company tonight in the city of Wilsonville that with the use of the Betsy, $197 million loan guarantee from the federal government, the U.S. Department of Energy, and a $20 million Betsy and a $20 million SELP loan, we can secure this company and create 500 jobs. Now, in and of itself, the Betsy isn't the only thing responsible, but it's one of the components that makes this whole thing possible. Without it, it wouldn't happen. So that's an additional 500 jobs within the next 2 years. Right now, that when we do a count over the past 3 years that this has been in existence, we can account for over 2,000 jobs directly created by the Betsy, through the use of the Betsy. Indirectly and induced jobs, there's thousands more. So it's been a very valuable program to us, to the state. And these are jobs located throughout the state.
Perhaps you could just comment a bit on the dash threes, where it does say standards that the minimum level of increased employment in Oregon for a facility are proportionate to industry standards. Maybe you could tell us how, in those conversations, that phrase applies.
I'm Chair Benz, member of the committee. I'm going to defer to Paul on that because he crafted the wording on it.
Chair Benz, members of the committee, again, I think what we're looking at here is to ensure that, recognizing the size of the credit, that it's not a substantial award to the applicant without that baseline threshold of employment. So, for example, not a $20 million Betsy for five jobs, that there are, you know, again, according to the industry standards and what we can expect from that, a reasonable level of employment that we can ascertain when we're negotiating with these companies.
And if I may add, Co-Chair Benz and members of the committee, the Betsy, the manufacturing Betsy, the way it's structured today, it's based upon investment in the facility, the amount of money that's invested in the size of the facility. What we want to add is jobs to that component, a measurable amount of jobs. Right now, my agency, in entering into contracts with these companies, we require the number of jobs. We tie it to both the Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund and the Betsy's are tied to the output of the plant as well as the number of jobs, and we hold them to that with, as Paul said, clawbacks to where they have to pay us back if they don't meet the agreed-upon threshold. I think it's very important. The jobs component isn't in the Betsy's today, and it needs to be there.
The obviously, folks that are unhappy with the Betsy would suggest that the amount we're paying per job exceeds the value that comes back to the state of Oregon. As the policy committee charged with measuring that value, perhaps you could address the type of per job input. And I noticed that the dash threes do contain a series of standards that address that issue. Maybe you could talk about that just briefly. And I don't know, the negotiations that are ongoing in Wilsonville, if you choose to leave those out and talk about something else, that's fine. But since lots of folks know about it, that would be helpful if you could talk about it.
Okay. Co-Chair Ben, member of the committee, it's a very good question. What's happened with the Betsys, and this is from my perspective, the Betsys are three different programs in one. It started out in 1979 as an energy conservation incentive, very successful, the first one of its kind in the country. This was large energy users that took advantage of it, and Oregon was one of the leaders in the nation in energy conservation issues, and I'm quite proud of that. Two sessions ago, when the governor introduced the manufacturing and the renewable Betsys, the program really took off, and particularly around renewables. I think when I look back at that time, of all the Betsys given out, only 9% were given to manufacturing. Okay, so when I look at it and look at the total, and I don't know the total number, and I'm just going to talk about manufacturing, and I'll use the Wilsonville. If we use this one Betsy to create 500 jobs over 2 years, within the next 2 years, what it means to the state when we do what's called an impact analysis of what those 500 jobs mean to that general area and the amount of business that's brought in through suppliers to that company, through the businesses that surround it. Our impact analysis indicates that while the state's giving out $4 million a year of this $20 million tax credit over 5 years, the state will realize in personal income tax revenue during that same year is $6 million. So there's a net gain of $2 million each year that these Betsys are used. So when we get that many employees, and that's why I want to tie this to the employment numbers, the state realizes a net positive gain. It's not something they give $20 million.
I suppose that maybe the better question is, have we changed the approach that we've used to be more cognizant of the job element? Is that, I think you've said it twice, might as well say it a third time, but is that what the concept is?
Co-Chair Benz, member of the committee, yes, that's exactly it. My department screens these applicants. We're the ones who have been working with this company in particular for over 2.5 years to get to this point. So it's ongoing negotiations. And when we look at these companies, we're looking for the ones that we feel are going to be most beneficial to the state and employ the most people at the highest wages possible in the industry. So it's something we look at consistently.
Thank you. Further questions for this panel? Yes, Reverend Smith.
Are we going to be having more panels on this? Are we going to be having public testimony?
We hadn't opened it up for public testimony, but if there's questions that you have, we do have revenue here that could address specific questions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I think what I was told off the record was that we are taking the Betsy and dividing it into three parts. And I think by my look at this amended bill, let me start. Are we planning to move the bill here, or are we planning to move it as amended? And if as amended, which amendment?
I believe the approach would be to adopt the dash threes and then move the bill as amended. And the idea right now is to move it to revenue, and then it would have a subsequent referral to tax credits. So there'll be two more opportunities to look at this particular advice.
And Mr. Chair, thank you for that. Thank you for sending it to the Policy Committee. It's very valuable. Am I right that we're dividing the three pieces, and this is the manufacturing piece of the three pieces?
You are right, but it would be best if that was answered by if we had Chris.
Our witnesses.
And also Amy, if they would like to come up. I'm sorry, Kate. And unless the two of you, would either of you like to address that issue first, his question?
Co-Chair Benjamin of the committee, Chris would be a better person to answer that.
Thank you. You're not leaving, I hope.
No.
Thank you. Kate and Chris, could you come up? Thank you.
For
the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office, and I believe the question was on dividing the Betsy up into the three pieces.
Correct.
And the one that I believe you were just discussing was 2523, and that is the manufacturing piece.
Mm-hmm.
Two other bills that are before you today, 2208 would be the renewable energy piece, and then 2414 would be the conservation piece. So the idea behind dividing those up is, over the years, Betsy has really expanded, and there are different policy objectives for the different credits. So separating the three into three different credits facilitates the policy discussions of each of those pieces with, for example, the manufacturing, the jobs created piece, the economic development tool is a much larger or most significant piece of that portion of the Betsy. And then renewable energy piece focuses on meeting the RPS, the Renewable Portfolio Standards, as well as having a jobs piece, but the jobs isn't front and center of that. And then the conservation is, the metric there would be purely on energy saved. And so the core, the way those two will be played out, at least in the current drafts that you have before you, is that the amount of the conservation credit would be a function of the energy saved. For the renewable energy, the credit would be an amount based on the amount of renewable energy created. And then the manufacturing has different metrics.
Yes, Mr. Assistant.
So I want to make sure, and I apologize for my, I think I have a little bit of excuse because I know some of this is a little bit late-breaking. So 2414 is the conservation, or 2414 is the manufacturing?
2414, Chair Vance, Representative Smith, 2414 is the conservation piece, is the conservation credit.
And 2523 is the manufacturing.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, is there anybody that you can think in your wisdom would be helpful to help us understand and be willing to advise on the relative benefit of each of the three? I mean, maybe it's our intent just to move the three separately and get out of this mess, which I understand the desire. But I've heard different things about the three and not as up to speed as for instance, Representative Reed has been getting deep on this stuff. Is there anybody who can testify to help us weigh the pros and cons among these three?
I think, Representative Smith, the folks that you're looking at, plus the folks from the department, DOE,
that's what we got.
Are those best suited to address these issues. So if you have questions, it's probably best to ask
great.
Them, and if the panel we have can't, we'll bring someone else up.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So if we're comparing and contrasting the three, and I hope that you'll be willing to offer opinions, and I don't know how free you are to do that, which is related to my question. Which of these has been most linked to, I'll limit it to the one we're talking about now. Is your impression that among the three, the manufacturing, I've heard better things about the manufacturing, Betsy, than some of the others, but I can't remember if I'm keeping my facts and memories straight. Is that the general impression, that the manufacturing, Betsy, is the one that has been most linked to job creation and its expected intent, or am I remembering that wrong?
Chair Vance, Representative Smith, I believe that is the general impression out there. In terms of the general, it's difficult to talk about general impressions, but my understanding, at least in the conversations I've had and in the meetings I've been involved with, some of the confusion revolves around the policy objectives of the different pieces of the Betsy. The Betsy has such, as a current under current law, has such a wide variety of projects. You can bring a solar manufacturing plant to the state for the manufacturing Betsy. You can also change the lighting in a building and get a Betsy. The impacts of the economic impacts of those are obviously going to be very different. And so whether or not a Betsy is good or bad or is achieving its goal depends on what that goal is. And the decision to come into these three pieces derives directly at that policy goal. The conservation, the driver there, would be, from a policy standpoint, to conserve energy. And so the metric, that would suggest that the best metric for evaluating that credit would be how much energy has been saved and what has it cost the state. not necessarily how many jobs are being created. Obviously, there will be a jobs piece to it because somebody has to install the new lighting, somebody has to install that new project. But if the key driver there is the energy saved, similarly with renewable energy, if the key driver there is to move away from fossil fuels and encourage technology in solar or geothermal or wave, then it would be a production of that renewable energy that would be the key metric for evaluating that policy. And then you get to the manufacturing piece, and obviously there'd be some jobs there with that research and so forth. But if the key there is to expand the state's energy profile, if you were kind of an investment portfolio diversification concept, then that would lay the groundwork for evaluating that policy and determining whether or not it achieved those goals and whether or not it was, quote, good or bad. And then the manufacturing, Betsy, again, with getting a job creation driver where the goal is primarily an economic development one, where you want to, the state wants to spend some money to attract businesses that would employ higher wage manufacturing jobs. And all of those, in all of the discussions, they get kind of meshed together, and it's challenging from a policy perspective to have those all under one bin, if you will. And so the goal here is to separate those. So you can have this separate policy discussion. Are we talking about economic development? Are we talking about renewable energy? Or are we talking about saving energy? So I don't think
that's helpful. That's helpful, and the splitting them up is helpful in trying to understand. Under your impression of, I think what I heard is the dash threes to 25-23, which is the focused on the manufacturing, Betsy. What, as you understand it, are the biggest changes, either of you, under this version, or what would be this version of the manufacturing Betsy, the Manny, I think we want to call it. I'll try to stop calling it the manufacturing Betsy. What are the biggest changes that you see that will actually impact either saving dough or increasing desired outcomes?
Chair Benz, Representative Smith, as I read the dash threes, it looks like just creating a more formal, stronger link to that jobs piece and the wage piece. It isn't necessarily a fundamental shift. It's just sending a stronger message, a clearer message, that that's really what's at the core, or one of the pieces at the core of the Manny, if you will.
I can speak to the structure, too. Chair Benz, Representative Smith, members of the committee, Kate Hossel, Office of Legislative Counsel, House Bill 2523, in the introduced version, is actually based in large part on the existing statutes dealing with the business energy tax credit and dealing with the renewable energy facility manufacturing piece of that as it was amended in the February 2010 session. So it essentially lifts out the pieces that just deal with the manufacturing facilities and creates a new structure of certifying and granting those credits, but that is based on the existing law for all business energy tax credits. And then in the dash twos and dash threes, it adds some new language about criteria. It also moves the administration of solely that piece to Business Development Department and away from Department of Energy. And in the amendments, it would enable the agency to have new criteria, building on the criteria that was developed over the last couple of legislative sessions, criteria for job creation, and I believe in the dash threes, there's actually some more language about employment and wage standards, but its structure is based on the existing law as far as all of these credits. It's just pulling it apart, enabling it to stand alone, and there's the new boldface language that you see in 2523, it mirrors the existing statutes for administering the existing tax credit.
Thanks very much. And I recognize there's other things we want to get to. And let me just say, Mr. Chair, and to assembled smart people in the room, as this moves forward and we look at it, one of the best ideas I have heard, and I'm not in a good position to evaluate it, is as we're looking at maybe it applies better to the manufacturing or better to one of the others, that rather than thinking of a single level of Betsy credit
right? If you apply and get approved, you get blank, a variable level, even if there are only two levels, right? If it was a great project that was innovative and saved a bunch of carbon or produced blank number of jobs, you got a 50% or maybe baseline just 25 or 35%. And I hope that as it moves forward in the conversation, we'll consider taking this valuable and controversial, but still valuable, blunt cudgel and adding just a, you know, considering a notch in it to make it slightly less blunt. But otherwise, I'm happy to move along.
And further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to distill everything I've heard and what I see with what we're being asked to do today into just a couple of sentences. It seems that the bill in front of us is pretty much administrative. It's not saying that a particular piece of Betsy is or isn't a good idea. It's saying if we're doing it, this is an improved way of administering it. What I'm getting out of this is it's improving accountability for achieving outcomes, that it's setting some pretty more specificity to the criteria that would be used for approving or measuring the value, which will also inform future decisions. Am I wrong about this?
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nathanson, I don't think you're wrong. And you gave me an opportunity to make a point that I was going to make before. I think there's a difference, and it kind of responds to what Representative Smith was saying as well. In what we're considering as changes to the manufacturing Betsy, it is more of an administrative as opposed to what we're thinking about in the conservation generation, which would include something notably different than what's included here, addressing the questions about sunsets and a much bigger, more fundamental change in how things are operating. For me, one of the most important things about this conversation as a whole is the fact that we start talking about things as separate components. You used one part of Betsy, and frankly, that's what I think has gotten us into a lot of trouble, brought us here, that people generally think of the Betsy, or say the Betsy, when they're talking about one simple component. So there's three things that are in front of us, each of them a little bit different, but I think you've accurately summed up what's before us in 2523.
And I join Co-Chair Reed in commenting on your comments, Representative Nathanson. I think they're pretty much exactly right. And the challenge for all of us, I think, at the policy level is to look at the amount of money that's been spent on the device and say, okay, is this the right thing to be doing? Is it doing a good job of it? And is this where we think we should be spending the money? And that the work that has been done by Kate and by Chris and others has been nothing short of astounding to try to break what's a very complex device into the three pieces, and the departments have worked extremely hard to try to place it before us in the best way they can. But at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, is it how we want to be spending the state's money, and is it doing a good job for us? And that is why, to me, the most important question is, okay, if we're going to spend a couple hundred million dollars on this, what are we getting for it? And I think we heard from economic development that we are receiving jobs back. This device makes it more finely tuned so we can see indeed if that is continuing to work. Are there other comments? Yes, Representative Widener.
Actually, question other than a comment, but just going through this, I like the structure, everything that you guys have been doing here, and it looks like the I's and T's are being dotted and crossed much better than what I've seen with Columbia River Crossing. With that being said,
it's not hard.
When as I'm going through this, in the discussions, when you're drafting the legislation, are we looking at return on investment? So this company is going to be getting $1 million Betsy. They're going to have 500 people working for them. We'll have a five-year return off the tack, basically the revenue coming in from the employees at the facility, things like that. Do those come into play in the discussion during the crafting period of this?
Chair Benz, Representative Widener, they do. One of the challenges is how recognizing that the state needs to know what it's getting for the money it's spending. If you're spending $100 million, what is the state getting? And what is that return on investment? And what is the appropriate metric for each of the three components? there are some challenges in terms of putting all of that into statute, but I would let Kate talk to that. So there, you have that piece of it where you would see it as language in statute versus information that the administering agencies would be held accountable for to come back and report to the legislature. It's like, okay, this is we're tracking this information, and a lot of that information, it needs to be recognized up front that as a project gets certified to begin with, that they start tracking that information, whether it be jobs or the amount of energy or the kinds of energy, and that tracking process is set in place. And then we come back to the legislature and say, okay, you spent $100 million on generation projects, and this is what was generated, and this is how a return on investment could be calculated, and this is what the return was. What would the legislature like to do with the program from that point forward?
And may I follow up? Is there a number being thrown around? Is it like a 5-year return that we're shooting for, 10-year return, 2-year return?
Chair Vance, Representative Weiner, I don't believe it's gotten to the point where people are specifying, you know, a 5-year or 6-year or 10-year. It's more a recognition of the value of the return on investment being a very valuable component of the discussions and being necessary for the committees and the legislature to have those policy discussions.
Brief comment?
Yep.
Go ahead. Excellent job. It looks like you guys are being pretty thorough with this, and I appreciate what we're doing with these credits now.
Further questions for the panel?
Yes,
sir. Yes,
a quick one. The and I apologize. You know, my stack I have here, I had a hard time keeping straight, so I'm not able to quickly find it under the amendments. What's the sunset that we're proposing under the dash threes?
It would be January 1st, 2018. I believe it's the last section of the bill.
Great. Thank you. How come? Why that time frame?
I think that Chair Vance, Representative Smith, I believe that ties in with the current 6-year convention that is being used. There isn't anything magical about the 6-year. These would generally be starting, the current Betsy would be sunsetting, under current law sunsets on July 1st, 2012, and these new ones would go into place then. And so there'd be a few years to get going, and then January 1, 2018. But I don't know that there's anything magical behind that number per se.
I better ask a question.
So it seems like the sunset date is one of the more important things, and we'll leave it to the next committee to really get into the bottom of it. But do you have any and evaluate it? But do you have any? Either of you have any, you know, judgment to apply or advice to give about, you know, the case I could make for every biennium is that's what we do with education funding, that's what we do with transportation funding, that's what we do with just most things. One could say, well, it should be longer so that businesses who are doing this have some predictability and can plan accordingly. Any reason why 6 would be significantly better than 4, for instance?
And Mr. Chair, may I clarify just one thing,
please,
in Representative Smith's question? If I'm remembering right, we're not extending the sunset with the manufacturing piece, just the conservation and generation. Do I have that right?
That's correct. Maybe did I mishear the question?
Yeah.
I think, probably for me to put words in Representative Smith's mouth, but I think he was asking a general question about sunsets, and I just wanted to be clear that the manufacturing, as is proposed here, does not touch on the sunset. The sunset discussions are for the conservation and generation, but not manufacturing.
Hmm. The manufacturing sunset is not changing.
And the manufacturing sunset remains 2018 as it was prior?
January 1st, 2014.
Raised 2014. Thanks. I'll reserve my questions on the sunset. Thank you, Representative Reed. I'll reserve my questions on the sunset for the other bills.
Representative Reed, did you have another? That was just your clarification.
Yes,
sorry.
Correct.
Further questions to this panel? See none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think that is... I think I'm ready for a motion, yes.
Mr. Chair, move the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2523.
Co-Chair Reed has moved the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2523. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, just in light of what happened with the prior bill, getting the dash 3s for that prior bill so late in the game, I got the dash 3s for this today. It's hard to vote on something when we rarely get a chance to even read it. Thankfully, it's a short one. I know some other ones are very, very long, and I just hate to be put in a position of voting on something that I haven't read. So I just want to make that blanket statement that I'd appreciate getting amendments in advance. so that we can read them and fully vet them.
Thank you, Representative Representative Reed. Co-chair Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lindsay, I totally agree with you. And two comments. The dash two, I only got the dash three recently as well, and I may have missed some, but I think the only difference between dash two and dash three may be in the last part of sub seven, where employment is added. So that may help a little bit. The other comment is on the ones that are to come that are much longer. I'm with you. I spent the weekend reading them, but I didn't have them much before that. So I think you may take some comfort in if it comes to me the motion I intend to make when we get to that stage.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Mr. Chair, I mean, the way I understand it, these we will be sending without any recommendation to revenue to be gone through, correct?
I think that was that. Well, I think that's what the motion will be. But
if that's what the motion is intended to be, I will support that motion and will be supporting these amendments.
Further discussion regarding the amendments? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Bent?
Aye. Motion passes. Do I hear a...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2523 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm made aware of the fact that we don't have the fiscal and the dash threes consistent with our recent receipt of it. We have them in the dash twos, but not dash threes, so I don't think we can go any further until we receive that, perhaps during this meeting.
So the motion is withdrawn?
Correct. Withdraw the motion.
All right. With that, Zach, is the proper thing to do to close the work session for the moment?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2523 and open a work session on House Bill 2208. Zach, can you tell us about the bill?
House Bill 2208 modifies provisions related to single energy facilities. However, we do have a complete change on the amendment.
And I think Co-Chair Reed wanted to be heard on this.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps this would be the time to invite Director Repine up while I make a brief comment. I'll let you do that if you want to.
Yes, Director Repine. Where is Director Repine?
He's in the back row.
There he is. Could you, if you could come up, please, that would be good.
While he's coming up, colleagues, you'll remember the original iteration of House Bill 2208 related to definitions around energy facilities. The co-chair and I have been in touch with people who advocated for that bill, as well as others who are in a better position, at least than I, to judge the issues that are inherent in that bill. We agree that there is an issue there that the legislature needs to consider, but we're not ready to do that. Bob Shiprack, former legislator and now outgoing chair of the Energy Facility Siting Council, has graciously agreed to convene a work group and continue discussions about those issues with the hope that he'll be back to us perhaps as early as the 2012 session with recommendations. So as we are using this bill now for the purposes that will be explained momentarily, I wanted to make that note. Thank Mr. Shiprack for his willingness to do that and for the proponents of the bill for their willingness to take the conversation in that direction and let us use the vehicle. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair Reed. Perhaps Director Repine, if you could share with us the nature of House Bill 2208, or at least the, make sure I have the right dashes here, the dash one amendment. Is that right, Zach?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I'm Bob Repine, acting director of the Department of Energy. I apologize to the chair. I was comfortably sitting in my office watching this hearing, and I was given an emergency phone call to get over here as quick as possible, so I didn't bring anything, and I don't think I was very well prepared for it. So I guess what the sum and substance of what you're asking for, sir?
I think because it's been a while since we've heard about these bills, it would be worthwhile just to generally explain what the dash ones do, and And in general, we might not limit your remarks to just the dash ones or the second leg of the Betsy, but why it makes sense to divide the Betsy into the three parts we're now looking at.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. As you just took action on the manufacturing credit, clearly the bill that was just passed on to the full revenue committee dealing with the manufacturing credit, ownership inside the Oregon Business Department seems to be appropriate since, as you heard Director McCabe talk about the fact that they spend the better part, in the case of the example he was using for Wilsonville, over 2.5 years working with the client themselves, allowing them to have control of that credit and putting the sideboards of what the deliverables are in the contractual agreement that exists between Oregon Business and those companies allows the bill or that credit to be placed in the proper location. So there's a value of cause and effect. If they don't deliver on what they're going to do, there's a clawback provision that will have an effect on their resources. And so I think clearly the move the credit for manufacturing of Betsy over to Oregon Business is a good move. It matches up much more clearer with their mission that they're now assigned by the state of Oregon. 2208, if I'm not mistaken, is the Jenny bill. Is that not correct? For those in the audience, there has been a renaming of these things. And so, as we've always referred to the program as the Betsy program, and as I was just leaving the office, I think I heard some conversation of the fact that there's really three legs to the Betsy program. One is the manufacturing, the one you just disposed of. The remaining two are the conservation and the renewable portions of the Betsy credits. These two remaining bills are those. However, in the interest of moving on past Betsy, the new bills have been kind of assigned three different pet names. I don't know if they actually will become in law names, but the one you just passed was more commonly referred to over the last few weeks as Manny for manufacturing. The one you're talking about now is Connie for conservation, and 2414 is more commonly referred to as Jenny, with a G-E-N-N-Y or I-E, I don't know, for generation. So that's how you get to the renewable. Both the remaining two bills, and 2208 is open right now, so I'll speak to that one. Fundamentally changes the process of which the Betsy has historically been awarded. This bill also suggests that the current Betsy program regarding conservation would still go to its scheduled sunset date. This bill would actually take effect at a point after that. And so you would actually be able to take the current program, run it to the end of the rail, and get off of that train and get onto a new train and move out on this new framework. I think the group that worked on this realized that there's a huge amount of complexity between having one program try to converge or merge with another program that is significantly different structured in how the programs are managed or operated in today's environment. If you were to do a general statement of the conservation program as we know it in Betsy today, that allows for a project up to $10 million to come into the department, be reviewed for its conservation elements that they're asking for, and would be awarded an amount 35% of that up to $10 million. So if you had a $10 million conservation project and it was deemed to be valid and acceptable by the department, you would be a recipient of a pre-cert that would say to you that you would be eligible to, at the completion of the project and the proof and certification of those conservation measures, that you would be eligible to receive $3.5 million in a Betsy award or a tax credit award. This new construct that's in here takes somewhat of a different approach. It is measuring it on a value based on the energy saved. And so there would be an amount awarded based on the energy saved as opposed to just the cost of the collective cost of the conservation activity that's being considered. This bill also changes the limits that are eligible for the program. It creates a tier process, for lack of a better way of describing it, where you'd have two different areas where projects could come in, lower tier level, a tier one and a tier two. They were described by different values or different amounts of money that would be eligible for the programs. Whereas today, the program is not a tiered program, it is not a cap program. This bill also, I think, suggests a cap to it as well, which is a different, quite a difference from the current uncapped program that's there today. I don't remember what else is in the bill.
Director, are you addressing 2208, the generation?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So, Mr. Chair, without having spent a lot since seeing the newer Dash amendments, we've prepared some comments to this as we met last week, that we're waiting to catch up with those comments as the bill moves to the Revenue Committee. We weren't really going to present those today. I didn't think it was up for a public hearing.
It might be most interesting to this committee if you could elaborate on your comments about the value of the device. And that is, why is it worthwhile for Oregon to be spending money in this way on the generation of Etsy?
And I heard that earlier by Representative Smith. The question that the chair is asking is, you know, what does it bring Oregon? What do we buy? What's the get for the give? I think the best way to describe conservation in particular is, it comes to us in a couple of things.
Actually, generation is what we'd rather be focusing on.
We want to do generation?
Right. Because 2208 is actually generation. And I know we spent a great deal more time in our work group on conservation.
Yes.
And so
it's the Jenny.
But maybe you want to even go to a 40,000-foot level on generation. But that is the bill that's before us.
Okay. Well, I just laid out kind of more of the conservation piece. So the generation piece, I'll go through some of the same kind of discussion to lay the kind of the general parameters around, and then I'll get to the what's the get what for the give. The generation bill is, again, a little different in structure. The premise of this bill is also, the way I remember it, is based on the current renewable program, generation, going to its assumed sunset in 2012 as well. Again, for the same reason, much easier to have a program come to an end and in parallel start a new program as opposed to trying to get these things to intertwine and make them make sense at the point where they hand off to each other. So that would be structured in this. This also has carries on the cap that already was created during the February 2010 session on House Bill 3680. So the generation or renewable has a cap built into it as well and continues that cap. The bill changes also how it's measured, as opposed to as a current generation of renewable projects today, which is eligible, they're eligible up to $20 million. If you had a project, pick in the hypothetical biomass facilities, and it was going to cost you $40 million to build that, you would be eligible to come to request a pre-cert application for a Betsy up to $20 million of that $40 million project. It would be based on the cost and the generation of what it was going to produce, but at the end of the day, if meeting all those criteria, you would be awarded at the final completion of that project and demonstration that you completed as you presented it, and you did produce the product at that cost, you could be eligible for a $10 million Betsy credit. So that's one of the differences between the two programs. One's a 50% credit, the other one's a 35% credit. This bill, again, changes much of that process. It will be measured on how much a value that would be determined on your power generation. So it also, if I remember correctly, changes the eligibility of the project, reducing it considerably. So there's, I think, a maximum of $2 million available for a credit as opposed to the now $10 million. So it sizes the program down significantly from what it is today. I think the best way to describe what the state of Oregon gets from renewables comes in a couple of ways. One, a renewable would suggest that we don't have to rely on our traditional forms of fuel, coal and fossil fuels, to create our energy. So in the efforts of this state, joining other states in the United States, we create a much bigger footprint for renewable opportunities for the citizens that consume the power. I think that's an advantage. We currently in the state of Oregon have a standard for creating a renewable portfolio standard of a certain percentage by year 2025, and these programs address that mandate by this that's been set up by the state of Oregon. Third, you have an interesting way of diversifying some of the technologies in areas that are not generally associated with energy generation. In Oregon, our two primary energy generation sources have been the hydro that comes from the Columbia River and to a smaller degree, but an important degree, the manufacturing of power from the Boardman facility that's owned by Portland General Electric, which is coal plant-fired facilities today. So they amount to a large portion of the power. By using the renewable, we are able to have renewable sources coming from a variety of places in the state, not just exclusively in those areas. And so you have a much broader distribution system for power opportunities. I think the... Again, what we get is a much more, I think, much more robust system statewide, not relying on fossil fuels, and addressing a mandate that's set up by this Oregon legislature to create renewables as part of the overall portfolio for power. So those probably are some of the gets that we get for giving the credits up. The indirects come from all these programs. They vary in the number and size, but every renewable program that's developed in Oregon creates jobs. It creates economic opportunities for communities. It creates construction jobs on the front end, and most part will generate some or greater numbers of long-term jobs in the continuation of the operation of those facilities. And so they do have an economic advantage to the state of Oregon in producing those dollars that turn over in the state of Oregon. As a reminder to the members, there is a report that will be on your desks this mid-April, or excuse me, end of April, 1st of May, that was from a bill in 2009, House Bill 2180, which required the department to do an analysis of what the economic impacts are on large wind and conservation projects. And so that report is being completed. We've seen the rough draft of it. We've pushed back on comments, and we should be seeing the final draft by the 28th of this month. So you'll have that information, which will actually give you some of those more measurables on the economics for the state, economics for the community, dollars invested, how many times those dollars have turned or churned in the community, and what does it really bring to the state of Oregon in investment versus what you've given up in credits over time.
Thank you. Further questions for the director? Yes, Representative Smith.
I know we need to move along, so I'm not going to ask my questions here. I have a lot of bills up here, but I will for Bob, flag three things that I'd love to hear about afterwards offline. One, getting an opinion on the sunset length, right? I don't know if it needs to be six, ought to be four, ought to be eight. I think that matters. Second, and I have not, this is a relatively long amendment, and I've only received it today. If there is or should be, or I guess what would be the differing impact on different types of generation, and then the third, if there should be more than one level of the Betsy. Those are three things that I would hope that the Revenue Committee, but questions they might ask, if that's in fact where we're sending it, and with the chair's understanding that we are sending it to the Revenue Committee without recommendation, I won't press my questions here.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Further questions? Thank you very much, Director, and probably you shouldn't leave because I have a feeling we're going to need you right back up here. Chair motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2208. I believe they're dated April 12, 2011.
Co-Chair Reed has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 2208. Is there discussion? Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I cannot in good conscience vote for something that I have not read you received this amendment. 16 pages was put in our folder this morning. It may be good, I don't know. I probably could vote yes on it, but I simply cannot vote for something that I have not yet read and did not have time to read.
Thank you, Representative. I think a lot of us share that, though, although some of us did serve on the work group and thus have had a bit of an advantage on this language. Is there further discussion?
Yes,
Representative.
And I share Representative Lindsay's concern. I do plan to vote yes on the amendments, and the purpose with which I can resolve my concern is so that then the next committee can evaluate the bill as they hope it to be evaluated, right? And without since we're moving without recommendation, I think that I'm comfortable voting against the amendment.
And I'll vote to move it without recommendation, but for the amendment, I just want to make sure it's on the record. I can't vote for something I haven't read.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, adding to the possible confusion, for example, there are letters in our packets or letters that we've received individually, perhaps, urging us to vote yes or no on this bill, but those were written before today, and so it's really hard to determine whether those opinions would still stand, given this particular amendment.
Right, and thank you, Representative Nathanson, and just as a remark, in working on the work group and seeing the complexity of taking a very large program, breaking it into three pieces, and trying to move that through this process in a timely way has been pretty challenging. And I do want to take this opportunity again to thank the director, both directors, for their work and also, of course, revenue. And Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm quickly going through, as the department was kind of explaining things, I'm wondering if the department's even had a chance to go through the -1 amendments to take a look at them, because there's some conflicting things, because it looks like it's 20% credit and not a 35% anymore, and
right,
some issues like that, because we kept referring it to it as a 35% credit and it's a 20% credit that there's.
Chairman and committee members, yes, my reference is really to giving you the lay of the landscape as it pertains to the Betsy program today. Conservation is 35%. We are aware of the fact that that parameter has moved in this dash amendment. So we were, as the chair indicated, we were part of that working discussion with the committee members when they were trying to put the details together on the dash one that's in front of you today.
So, but I have the same concerns as everybody else. I mean, I'm flooding through this, and this is probably, for me, the weakest point of the Betsy, the credits that we do. But I'm glad it's going to another policy committee, and revenue will take a look at it. But I'm, again, hoping that we don't send it with recommendation when we're not sure what we're voting on totally here.
Thank you, Representative Widener. Further
Mr.
discussion?
Chairman, if I might, just so there isn't any confusion by the committee members, we saw the dash ones, I think, last week on Tuesday. So we have been working on our comments as you are reflecting your statements about just seeing them now. We've been working on the dash ones, but we've held off on introducing our comments to the dash one until the bill lands to the next committee that was going to be scheduling to have open discussions on the bill.
Further questions, further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Widener.
Which one? The same motion, it's the dash one.
On 22.
Motion for adopting the dash one amendment.
Thank you, Representative Widener. Did you have a question? Or
no, I was just clarifying.
Okay.
And aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Behan?
Aye. The dash one amendments are adopted. Is there another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2208 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation.
And it's been moved.
And one additional, Mr. Chair, with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
It's been moved. House Bill 2208 passed to the Revenue Committee without, as amended to the Revenue Committee without recommendation, with a subsequent referral to tax credits. Is there discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Bent?
Aye. Motion passes. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2208 and open a work session on House Bill 2414. Second.
House Bill 2414, as introduced, transfers the administration of income tax credit. However, it is being used as the Betsy, the portion of the Betsy.
And we have Representative Repine, who did already comment, I think.
That was 12 years ago, sir.
He was Representative Repine.
I'm sorry. Director Repine did comment a little on this, but perhaps you could summarize fairly succinctly House Bill 2414, what it does. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. 2114, as I was teeing up before, is the conservation component of the Betsy program. It does make some significant changes in the program, much like the other bill does. It's not the same credit program that was known to be in existence with the Betsy program as we have it today. It changes it considerably. It does create a tier process. It puts a cap in place. It changes the way that the credit is awarded. It's based on energy saved calculations over time, as opposed to just the cost associated to the improvement for the facilities. If I'm not mistaken, it also has a process in it that issues a credit that has a clawback provision to it, so you have to show that over a period of time that you're meeting those conservation levels that you've indicated in your application to us, and if you don't meet those savings energies, then there's a clawback provision that allows us to recoup some of those funds for not meeting the performances that you stipulated in the program. It changes the cap for the amount of money that's going to be available for the program, the size of the programs. If I'm not mistaken, it also changes who can use the program. Currently, the credit program is open to all users, including governmental agencies and for businesses. This has some preclusion language in it, if I remember correctly. So there's our changes. They're far different. And I think primarily the big one is that this suggests a cap for this part of the program. The renewable and the manufacturing programs that we've already talked about and you've taken action on had caps in their past. This one has not had a cap in it. So this one is now a capped program. So it'll change dramatically the amount of money that's been being put out toward in the credit program in the next years to come. And it also extends the sunset, I think, to 2018.
Questions for the director?
I have a comment. It doesn't necessarily mean a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been on the work group, so I've obviously seen this in process and been able to see the amendments ahead of time. And this one I have more concerns about, and I think we talked about that in the last meeting, and that is there are a lot of ways to get into the conservation piece, and one of the ways that groups can get in is under transit, through transit passes, gas subsidies, which are used in rural areas as matching dollars for federal dollars. There's about $10 million, I think, at risk on the Betsy. And I haven't been able to see how it fits into this particular outline. And it's not that I don't appreciate the direction the outline is going. I just don't see how transit fits. And it's a very big concern for me. And I think those of you out there should be concerned, too, when your transit districts come to you and raise concerns. So I'm having trouble with this one. I think I might have trouble voting for this one the way it is now. So I wanted to make sure I put that on the record.
Thank you, Commissioner Byer. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to react and reflect on our Vice Chair's eloquent comments, and I think there's anyone who is a stronger or more tireless advocate for transit and who makes a better case than she does. I think she makes excellent points here. What I have come to conclude based on our conversation so far is that the fact that transit is part of the Betsy is more a reflection of our inability or unwillingness to fund transit appropriately. I think tax credits are a relatively clumsy and ineffective way of doing it, and I would rather be doing it directly. Given that, there is tension, I think, in what we have before us, because it doesn't specifically address transit. On the other hand, I think there is a lot to commend this approach for its return if we're asking different projects to compete against each other in terms of payoff. Having said all of that, I think it's clear that we will continue to wrestle with the question of how transit should or shouldn't be included in this. Some have suggested that there might be an independent vehicle, pun sort of intended, to accommodate that question. But I really appreciate your comments, Representative Byron. I think they're right. We'll certainly keep talking about it.
Further discussion? Seeing none, thank you, Director. Ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2414, dated April 12, 2011.
Chair Reed has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 2414, dated 4-12-11. Is there discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the same reasons, I can't vote yes on this, I mentioned before.
Understood. Further discussion? President Widener.
These amendments, I will be a no on because they're a little more complex and there's a lot of blanks in here that are waiting for numbers to be put in. So just so revenue knows they need to go through this very closely, I will be casting a no vote on the amendment.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just Representative Widener, rest assured that the co-chairs and I, the co-chair and I, are both members of the Revenue Committee. We've got the message about going through it carefully.
Further discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Nathanson,
aye.
Representative Smith,
aye.
Representative Lindsay,
no.
Representative Widener,
no.
Vice Chair Byer,
no.
Vice Chair Sheehan,
yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Vance?
Aye. Motion passes. Vice Chair Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2414 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2414 as amended to without recommendation to Revenue with a subsequent referral to Tax Credits. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, while I don't love it, I think I want to keep it moving with the hope we can settle something on this. Otherwise, we could lose everything.
Further discussion? Seeing none, will clerk call the roll?
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Lindsay.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Vance?
Aye. The motion passes, and with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2414, and we're going to take a 5-minute recess. The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come back to order. And just for everyone's schedule, we're going to probably take up HB 2130 first, but just very briefly, and then we're going to go to 3039, then we'll go to 2131, then to 2840, 3528, HJM 22, 2042, and 2332. Those bills have the paperwork ready. The others don't. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2130. And Judge Sircum, is that right? If you, thank you for being so patient. If you could come up. And Zach, could you tell us about this bill?
House Bill 2130 modifies provisions regulating periodic review of comprehensive plans and regional framework plans.
Judge, go ahead, and if you could just share with us what you have to say in a couple of minutes, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Vance. My name is Tim Sircum. I'm a member of the Oregon Court of Appeals, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk for a few minutes about House Bill 2130 on behalf of my court. The court does not have any sort of substantive position on any of the substance of this bill, but we do want you to be aware of some of the practical and fiscal consequences of the legislation on how our court works. I've become aware of some changes in the bill in the last few days that would allow for more full briefing of urban growth boundary appeals before the Court of Appeals. And those, I think, will be helpful and make our task of writing opinions in these types of cases a bit more easy. But our concern still remains with a standard in the bill that is directed to the Court of Appeals and that requires the court to consider these type of cases and decide them with the greatest possible expediency. This standard is being proposed to apply to urban growth boundary changes as well as periodic review decisions. And before, it had applied just to very narrow species of cases. The problem is that we expect there to be in the next biennium somewhere between 15 and 25 urban growth boundary decisions of the Land Conservation and Development Commission, and that it will generate 10 to 12 appeals before our court, which we will be then tasked, if this bill passes in the current form, to decide with the greatest possible expediency. So the Judicial Department has prepared a fiscal impact statement that estimates that the expedited processing of appeals of the LCDC urban growth boundary orders would cost the Court of Appeals $186,880 in personnel costs in the next biennium. And so I'm available to respond to questions about how that was calculated, but let me just give you a little bit of background. Our court typically processes 30 to 40 land use cases each year. And those land use cases are generally speaking, appeals from the Land Use Board of Appeals, an agency that hears decisions of appeals from local governments, a three-judge referee panel. It's just like a regular appeal, and we hear appeals from LUBA, and we are tasked to decide those appeals relatively quickly, in 3 months. That's a relatively easy task because LUBA does a real good job on those types of appeals, and for the most part, 9 out of 10 cases from LUBA are appealed. So it's not a heavy workload for the court to consider and to give special consideration to LUBA appeals. These types of cases, these urban growth boundary changes cases, are very, very complicated cases. As I mentioned, there's likely to be 10 to 12 appeals to our court involving some of the more complex urban growth boundary questions in the state involving Eugene Springfield, Metro, Medford, and some others. We've not, in our court, had very many of these cases in the past several years. We have had maybe a total of 4 cases, counting one that's now pending, in the last 6 years. And so forecasting what the effect is going to be on having 10 to 12 of these cases to be decided very quickly is what our concern is.
And, Judge, we appreciate that summary. because we have talked with a number of times with the director, we're aware of the issue. Are your remarks linked to the most recent amended bill?
They're addressed to text that was in the original bill and that remains in the bill with the amendments. And that pertains to Section 11 of the changes to 197.651. And that directs the Court of Appeals to decide urban growth boundary decisions from LCDC and periodic review decisions from LCDC with the greatest possible expediency. And that's the concern.
Right, and we understand that, and perhaps we could have, is it, what's the proper title? Assistant Director?
So if I just want to add one comment.
Please.
The problem for us in terms of our workload is that squeezes those decisions in a very short period of time, and it causes us, because we have a very finite and overworked court, resources for our court, it requires us to delay other appeals, administrative agency appeals and civil appeals, without additional resources.
Right, and we understand that, and we had discussed that with the department and are anxious to hear their response. So if you could stay here, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And so we have, after discussions with the co-chairs, decided to try and come up with the Dash 6 amendments, which are in was our attempt to remove a potential fiscal. And what, in a nutshell, what those amendments do on this issue is remove Section 8 of 197.651 from consideration of these kinds of cases that were just described, the UGB cases. That's a section that has explicit timelines for the Court of Appeals. We did not assume Section 11 was something that would lead to a fiscal, because in many respects, if it had been applied to our department, we would not have put a fiscal in that, because it's not a mandatory, it's really a you should go faster kind of provision. It's our understanding, based on discussions we've had with Judge Sircum here, that the court views that in a much stronger light, and therefore we probably should have prepared amendments that also remove Subsection 11. We will try to do that if that's your determination. If rather your determination is that this bill should go to the court of Ways and Means, and we can work with that and try and take more time to work on this. I think our preference at this point is to see if we can get through Ledge Council something that would remove Subsection 11. It's my understanding in talking with Judge Sircum that would remove the fiscal from judicial.
It would. Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? See none. Thank you very much, Judge. Thank you for your patience.
I appreciate the courtesy. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Colleagues, we're not ready to move this today, we don't have the paperwork. Is that right, Zach?
Not on the Dash 6.
So with that, I'm going to close the work session on 21:30. And
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are we going to work on getting those amendments and everything by Wednesday?
Zach, do we have time sufficient to do anything?
That's up to the fiscal revenue and Ledge Council. We can get the request in, but it's up to the turnaround on those agencies as well.
So we would just encourage the department to bring their amendments as quickly as they can and see if they're ready for our review on Wednesday. All right, with that, I'm going to open the work session on 3039. Zach.
Thank you. House Bill 3039 directs the Department of Transportation to erect roadside memorials for police officers killed in the line of duty.
I believe there is an amendment. Representative Gokutcher Reed.
Mr. Chair, I'm frantically looking for the right one. Which amendment? Mr. Chair, move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3039.
Co-Chair Reed has moved the Dash, which amendments?
One, I think.
Dash 1. Let's find the Dash 1.
Yep.
Dash 1. Amendments to House Bill 3039. Do you have the date?
Yes, March 7th, 2011.
March 7th, 2011. Is there discussion? See none, is there objection? See none, the dash one amendments are adopted. Co-chairman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3039 to, it's by prior reference, isn't that right?
Yes.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation and a referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Co-chair Reed has moved House Bill 3039 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Yes.
Is there a discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, it's passed. Motion adopted, and let's go to House Bill 2131. Zach.
House Bill 2131 modifies criteria for establishing and review of needed housing within an urban growth boundary.
And I, there, Bob. And I think you're going to be talking to us about the dash twos?
Correct. Good afternoon again. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and we've brought before you the dash two amendments. This bill has had a hearing already, and we discussed how it's a policy neutral adjustment of provisions for needed housing and other affordable housing types. The dash two amendments reflect a long discussion between ourselves and home builders and cities over two things. Section one has been scaled back so that the reporting requirements we would hope would be more affordable because they may be submitted electronically. That's the result of the amendments on page one of the dash twos. More substantively, the amendments they adjust the key standard of this provision that has to do with requirement to local governments that all standards for applied to needed housing must be clear and objective, and that's especially on page two of the original bill. It's be inserted in the middle of the page at where sub four is. That's the important parts of these. We are omitting sections 9 and 10, and 9 at the request of Manufactured Home Association. It's an amendment that was non-substantive, and we've agreed to that. And then we've agreed under section 10 that we should not be directed to do rulemaking on this. We will attempt to do so, but we're not quite sure right now on the resources of the department to do that sort of rulemaking, so we're dropping that section.
Questions for Mr. Rindy? Yes, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. I'll state them both very quickly. I know time is short. First of all, you mentioned the Manufactured Home Association requested getting rid of something that you thought was non-substantive. I'd like for you to explain in just one or two sentences what that is.
Section 9 was not something the department had asked for. Ledge Council thought they should reference those statutes. So that was their, they put that in there. But the way they did it raised a question about the standards for manufactured housing versus building code standards is something that actually comes out of federal law, and they're different. And there was concern that the way this had been done, it might imply that building codes apply to manufactured housing, which isn't the case. And so since that inference was there and we hadn't even asked for this, we've agreed the easiest thing to do is just omit that reference.
Thank you. And the second question is, could you say very quickly, the substance of changing in the various places where it occurs, changing from residential density to net residential density, what are you subtracting out?
Roads, streets, typically are about 25%. Part of the problem with this reporting requirement is because it didn't specify net or gross density is the other commonly used standard. And those can be quite different. Some of the problems with reporting is cities didn't know which one to report, so we've just tried to clear that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to hear it.
Further questions? Just had one. The cities are now okay with the amendment. Is that correct? Is that what I heard?
That's our understanding.
who were the other folks that were most concerned about it? Is there some other group? Seems to me there was.
Well, the cities, I think, is a large group. It includes the Oregon City Planning Directors as well as the League of Cities, and so there were individuals there. And then for the home builders, we had a couple of attorneys on this. Al Johnson, retired,
and they are now happy with it. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendments to House Bill 2131, dated April 7th, 2011.
Co-Chair Reeves moved the -2 amendments to House Bill 2131, dated
April 7th, 2011.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the -2s are adopted. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2131 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2131 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. We need a carrier. Representative Nathanson, since you were so... Are you enthusiastic about carrying it? I don't care if you're enthusiastic. Would you like to carry it?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson. I appreciate it. That'll close the work session on 2131 and open a work session on 2840.
House Bill 2840 just expanded the Green Jobs Growth Initiative to include analysis of growth factors and employment projections for green jobs within forest project industries.
I don't think this is the first one we haven't had an amendment to.
Wow.
Do I hear a motion?
I'm a no.
Mr. Chair, I'm tempted at this point to make a comment that calls to mind Representative Lindsay's comments earlier about not being able to vote for something that doesn't have an amendment, but I won't. I move House Bill 2840 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2840 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
We call it purple jobs or something else.
Byway jobs.
It's only with my practice of assigning the carrying of the bill to he who speaks up. Anybody else want to speak?
I'll let Bonnie go.
Any other comments? Is there objection?
I'm a no.
You're no. Okay. Would the clerk call roll?
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Lindsay.
Yes.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Bent?
Aye. The motion passes. I do need a carrier. Are there any volunteers?
I can carry this one.
Representative Widener, thank you. Representative Widener carries. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2840 and open a work session on House Bill 3528.
House Bill 3528 expands membership of the Oregon Progress Board.
I think there is an amendment, and I think there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is that correct?
I think you're right.
Yes, we have a subsequent to Ways and Means.
Which one is this?
3528.
And we are looking at the dash, which are the fiscal of that amendment.
Dash one?
I'll bring it up.
Not anymore.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the Oregon House. This bill and amendment, which we discussed recently, will take the Oregon Progress Board, which was something created some years ago, I think with some good vision, to try to connect the money we spend to the objectives we accomplish, and has been through its life a bipartisan effort to, you know, kind of link better our decision making to our desired outcomes. It was defunded in the last legislative session without significant discussion in advance, and with some disappointment by several, with an important and relevant, I think, critique, which is it wasn't linked to policymaking sufficiently. So working with the new director of DAS and the Secretary of State and Chair Reed and others came out with shared a desire to think about these longitudinal benchmarks that we've been keeping now for nearly 20 years. How are they preserved? Right now they're preserved in the Secretary of State's office. And what should be their fate? And this bill merely does three things. One, asks them to either to come back with a recommendation, to ask the Parks Board to come back with a recommendation of how to merge or align the performance measures and the work of the Progress Board with the other commissions and committees that do this sort of work. There is, for instance, Representative Nathanson has done some fantastic work on the Government Efficiency Task Force. There is also right now Frank Morse's Committee on Performance Excellence had a recent conversation with Senator Morse on a possible merger of those two things to sort of shrink the number of task forces and commissions that we have. Second, to think about how the Progress Board benchmarks could be linked better to the Ways and Means budgeting process. And Mike Jordan has suggested some ideas for that. Happy to talk less or talk more, depending on what the committee prefers. And that's what the relatively humble bill purports to do.
Thank you. Questions for the representative? I have just a comment. I served on the board years and years ago, and it struck me that this type of linkage was the only thing that would make the exercise worthwhile. The challenge, of course, is figuring out exactly how to do it. And so I'm going to support the amendment and the bill, knowing full well it's going to take an awful lot of work and a great distance between what we have right now and where I think we want to end up.
Absolutely agree, Mr. Chair, and I think that everybody who's worked on this shares that sentiment and that view. I think, you know, different administrations prioritize this sector of activity differently. I think it is fair to say that whether it's, you know, both supporters and critics of the current gubernatorial administration agree that this is an area that the new head of DAS and the new governor's office does prioritize. But I think getting some help from them, getting some help from the Secretary of State's office, getting some help from Senator Morse and the Committee on Performance Excellence, I think, you know, confident may be a mild exaggeration, but I do have I do think it's more likely than not we'll come to come to something positive, and that's what I know about that.
Thank you. Questions? President Lindsay.
Do we know who's on the board right now? There's nine of them?
Yeah. We're going to be looking into who, what legal authority we required for them to sort of make a recommendation, or if we think that could come straight from the chair or from the people who've been working on it with DAS and with Secretary of State's office. I can get you a list of the members, current and past, and the but it tends to be a kind of good government bipartisan crew. People like Representative Benz prior to or Chair Benz prior to him being a representative. Senator Moore served on it in the past. I know young man Kyle Cady is the one member, and Sarah Gelser have been very recent members, but I can get you the current members. My guess is that the recommendation they bring would be less likely to be, you know, their work with a less likely to be lots and lots of meetings of them meeting, and more likely them providing some input, past members who don't currently sit on the Progress Board offering some input, and then people who actually might help implement putting a few options of recommendation that would need to come back to decision makers to evaluate.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Just for the record, I'm not sure if I was on the board. I'm not sure how I served on whatever it was it did. It's been so long ago. I just remember attending a lot of meetings regarding it. With that, if there is no further discussion, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash One Amendments to House Bill 3528, dated April 14th, 2011.
Co-Chair Reed has moved the Dash One Amendments to House Bill 3528, dated April 14th. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the dash, which were they?
Ones.
Are adopted. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3528 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 3528 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. That I'll close the work session on House Bill 3528 and open a work session on HJM 22. Zach.
House Bill Memorial 22 urges the federal government to fund the Columbia River Crossing Project.
Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 22 to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Reed, just repeat the motion. Co-Chair Reed has moved HJM 22 to the floor without recommendation, but with a subsequent referral to revenue.
Correct.
Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Smith.
Again, not sure the best order, but I would like to move for purpose of discussion, hopefully moving the 22-6 amendments to House Joint Memorial 22, and would welcome some discussion. They came in today, aren't particularly long, still ask for federal money for the Columbia Crossing area, and that's, I guess, my motion. Yeah, I moved -6 amendments to House Joint Memorial 22. I think that's all I have to say.
I'm sorry. Representative Smith, Representative Smith has moved the -6 amendments, and we are going to once again take a recess. Or Co-Chair Reed.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion.
Representative Smith.
I move the dash six amendments to Hal Strunk Memorial 22 and hope to discuss it.
Representative Smith has moved the amendments to HJM 22, the dash six amendments. And what's the date on that? April today?
13th.
April 13th. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is such a terribly important area of work that we're doing. I think it's only fair to each other as colleagues to talk about what we're thinking, as well as fair to the public. At the Dash 6 Amendment, I looked very quickly to see if I could figure out the substantive differences between a Dash 5 and a Dash 6, and I found two sections that seem to be added in 6 that don't exist in 5. One section is referring to recommendations or findings of something called the Independent Review Panel, and as much as I understand the process, which I wasn't part of, there was a predecessor called the Sponsors Council. So there's a section about something that they may have recommended, and there's another section about not raising taxes or reducing funding for other transportation projects and transit. And it's those two lines that I wanted to talk about very briefly. I understand the objective, and in fact that's one of my great concerns, which is I think we need to work more on rail than we have been as a legislative body. However, there's something that leaves me a little bit uncomfortable about a blanket statement about not reducing funding for other transportation projects. If you take the words quite literally, it's possible that certain projects may be found not necessary or less necessary in the short and medium term because other solutions were put in place. So I'm not sure how either broadly or narrowly to interpret that sentence. So I've got a bit of a problem with that section. That was lines 23 and 24.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further comments? Representative Smith.
Yeah, the two pieces that Representative Smith discussed, I hope will take seriously. Obviously, I hope people will vote yes on it. Let me take each in turn as well as say a third thing. We ought to phase the project. Saying that we ought to phase the project is not saying we shouldn't do it. It in fact is the moderate view. In fact, saying we shouldn't phase the project and that we should only do this in the precise way that we're doing it now is a bizarro world. It is hard for me to contemplate that view. So we ought to phase it, and I hope that we will all, as this moves along, push on that. That's way different than saying, let's not do it. In fact, that's saying, let's do it and do it in a way that actually might work. I talked to, including a conversation last night with somebody working on the project right now, who has talked to high-level people that work in this building, who said, this thing ain't happening, it's not getting funded, and you guys are going to keep, you're going to get the $200 million spent without having a workable project. If we do it in phases, we got a chance. It is the opposite of saying no. Saying yes to the current project is saying no to anything, almost for sure. Saying yes to phases gives us a chance. Second, the other point to me gets to the heart of the matter. I could imagine, or would be happy to hold over, for purposes of changing a little bit, the line that Representative Nathanson talked about. But if we brought to this chamber right now a bill that said, please raise the gas tax in order to do this project, I'd like anybody to guess how many votes we would get, right? And even if I only get 2 votes on this, right, that might not get many more than 2 either. And let's imagine you came with a bill that said, let's do this project. And because we're doing it, let's make sure that we're being fiscally honest, and therefore we are going to reduce already earmarked, already determined, already planned projects within the transportation plan. How many votes that thing's going to get? Not that many. In order to avoid both of those votes, We are trying to pretend that those issues do not exist. And that, to me, is not the kind of decision-making that helps yield positive outcomes. I do hope that we'll vote for this amendment was met. I mean, there were other options. This is a dash six, you know, rather than a dash two, because there were other options, including saying things like, no, let's fund the 25 bridges that have actually been viewed to be structurally unsound in terms of seismic capability, rather than the one that hasn't yet been identified to be structurally unsound. Let's do things entirely different from this. This is a way, was meant to be, and still is meant to be a way, for us to be in favor of a project, in favor of doing something, not a no, but a yes, that is responsible, actually could yield to an outcome, and that is honest about, accurate about, the financial choices in front of us. If the federal government says yes to our request, they say yes to our request, there's only one thing that we can, you know, we either got to shrink the project, stop funding other things we've already committed to, or increase the gas tax. There aren't other options, and we should be honest about that. I hope people will vote yes in the dash sixes. I'd vote yes on the dash sixes even as a memorial on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Further comment? Representative Byer.
Well, I share Representative Nathanson's concerns about that one section, but I like to share some timing issues that I think we look at. And first, we have a Congress that will be looking at a reauthorization plan somewhere in the near future, which doesn't mean you're going to get money right away. And if you're not ready to go, or if your project changes, or if something happens, you're not going to get it anyway. But at least you want to get in line for those dollars. I mean, I think that, for myself, I think that's the most important thing about sending a message to Congress. And while I feel a little better if I knew what high-ranking people in the building are telling us about this project that's never going to happen, who they were, you know, so I know, you know, who's telling us that and how much we can count on it. So with that, I certainly have enough concerns about the added language to be a no.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For me, the dash sixes are a very good compromise. So we're asking for a phased project, fiscal responsibility. We gave ODOT, they received the largest tax increase of any department last session, with registration fees and the gas tax, $600 million a year of biennium. We need to start making them be accountable and fiscally responsible with the dollars that they receive and how they spend them. And these projects, if we start taking them in a phased approach, doing our interchanges on our side, handling them ourselves, asking them to match funds for doing our interchanges to their federal highways, now we're alleviating a lot of our traffic problems before we even get to the bridge. And we're getting the ball rolling, and we can still get those funds, but we're not doing it in one massive project where it could end up being a bridge to nowhere, a tunnel, lots of different projects that have happened. We can start addressing these in small, simple steps rather than one large project that we are basically giving a blank check to if we just say, here you go, we want it all or nothing. So I support the dash sixes and what they're saying, and I would hope my colleagues would join me in doing the same.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that phasing is a very important concept. I have a question that there may be another member of the committee who could answer, someone who might have been chair of a transportation committee formerly. This is such a large project. I'm trying to think of large projects, large like this, or something like E-Court that the Judicial Department is undertaking. things that have so many parts to them. They're so complicated. They take so long to achieve, you know, to plan, to start, and to finish. And the number of years they span, it seems that large projects like this are of necessity phased anyway. And I'm having just a little, I'm a little bit puzzled. I suppose we're saying that we want to see what the phases are, which is phase one, which is phase two, and which is phase three. But I can't imagine that something like this wouldn't be occurring over a number of years and over more than one biennium. So whether it's budget or planning or other sorts of activities would just a due course would be phased. That's what I'm picturing.
Co-Chair Meyer.
Thank you. I didn't want to jump ahead of anyone. And that happens all the time. I think the biggest one that I could probably tell you is actually in our area, and that would be the I-5 Beltline project, which was three or four phases there, of which the first phase was finished, the second I can't exactly tell you the phases. We're on phases two and three, the third phases, of which one was moved up because of the transportation package last time. So that does happen throughout the state when they do phase projects. And I think as you get into a project and as they define themselves, of which we still don't know what the bridge is going to look like. There's still a lot of unanswered questions about this project that will shake out as we move forward. So I think everything is not decided. There are many decisions yet to be made as we go forward.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion?
Yeah, but I'd like to respond.
Yes,
sir. So the service and data, I think it's a good question, and I'll try to respond to it this way. First, I'll take the E-Court example. In many projects that we might do in phases, they might have elements that are relatively consonant, right? You can treat it as one thing because it's kind of one thing. And it might be one thing in a lot of places. You can say we're going to do it in Bend first and then, you know, Jackson County and then whatever. This is many projects disguised as a bridge. And we have been treating it and budgeting it, or actually failing generally to treat it and failing to budget it, as a thing. If we were explicit about breaking it into pieces, we said, should we or should we not spend $300 to $500 million on light rail plus interest? Should we or should we not spend $1.5 to $2 billion on local interchanges unless we're twice off on the materials, as you know, we might or might not be, plus interest? Should we or should we not do seismic retrofits? Should we or should we not add blank lanes? Should we or should we not fix the current rail bridge? If we thought of this, and if we forced ourselves to think of this in phases, not as phases of a single project, but as phases so that would allow us to think about if it should be in fact split up, I think our thinking would be much better. And I think we would have a much greater likelihood of doing two things: getting the project done and doing it without a big, big, big oops. We got three projects right now. ODOT's doing it, or what, 100% each over budget. That's okay if it's $200 million. But if people are right, if they're right that it's $3.85 billion, or if they're right that it's $10 billion with interest, or if they're right that it's $10-plus billion if materials charges are off, if you're 20% off on that, right, and if the tolling number is wrong, every project we got in our district, good luck, right? And that's true for everybody who's hoping this committee will apply its judgment best. And because we treat the bridge and the project as a yes or no proposition, and it's way nicer to be a yes, we fail to put it in its priority. I submit that putting it into phases is not merely semantics, but is a way for us then to take those elements, those phases, and lay them against other priorities and say, yes, a seismic retrofit is more important than, I don't know, fixing the seaside corridor, what happens when the sun goes down, sunrise corridor, thank you. Maybe that's more important than that. Maybe light rail isn't. But right now we're not making those priority judgments in any meaningful way, and I really hope that we will. And I would commit to continue to work on this, but it'd be nice if we sent the signal that just the rah-rah language with a couple of changes might not be quite as good as a, you know, citing the independent review panel as the one who said phases, and that we got to be careful about money jail.
Further discussion? Just one remark, and that is that I think this committee will be best suited by being as neutral as possible going into the hearings we hope to hold. I don't think the Dash 6 maintains the neutrality I would like. That being said, I would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Widener.
This is for the Dash 6.
This is for the Dash 6.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
Yes, move to adjourn the committee. 2-0.
Representative Lindsay?
Yes.
Representative Nathanson?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Chair Reed?
No.
Chair Benz?
No. Motion fails. Is there another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments to House Joint Memorial 22. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact in front of me. Date, dated April 13th, 2011.
I'm sorry, I handed you the wrong one.
May I amend, Mr. Chair? I move the Dash 5 amendments to House Joint Memorial 22, dated April 11, 2011.
Co-Chair Reed has moved the Dash 5 amendments to HJM 22. Is there discussion?
Let's vote.
That's your discussion.
That's my discussion.
Seeing no further discussion, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Lindsay?
Yes.
Representative Widener?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Benz?
Aye. The Dash 5s pass, and do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 22 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved HJM 22 to the floor without recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry, to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation. You can completely confuse that.
I think you got there, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Zach, what is the correct motion?
That is correct, to Revenue without recommendation.
Is there discussion?
Is there a subsequent referral or just Revenue?
I think there is a subsequent referral to
No.
There is not?
Just sure? Revenue.
Okay, just Revenue. Is there discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. On a bill that we heard earlier, what was the number? 3158. There was a short amount of discussion about the intent to have continued discussions and conversations. Is that relevant to this bill also, or memorial?
No. Speaking for myself, and Co-Chair Reed will have to speak for himself, but indeed the concept is that this memorial, also is true with HB 3158, would receive a great deal more discussion. And indeed, it had been my hope that this memorial would have passed Revenue and simply been a placeholder rather than having to adopt any amendment to it, because I felt fairly confident that it had insufficient support to move much of anywhere. But be that as it may, the idea is that we will hold hearings, and this most important matter of this project, and by that I mean the space between the two cities of Portland and Vancouver, not any particular project, be discussed, analyzed, thought through, yelled about until folks in this body are confident that this matter has received the attention it deserves. And so, indeed, it would be my hope that this would be a placeholder as those hearings go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I agree with all that, except my hope is that we'll be able to avoid yelling.
Further discussion? See none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Byer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Ban?
Aye. Passes, and the motion passes, and now we will open, I will close the work session on HJM 22 and open a work session on House Bill 2042.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What's the schedule? We have other meetings to get to. I was under the impression we were going until 4.
Let's see, Zach, we have this room until 5, but if we're going to lose committee members, we're going to, how much more time do you have? Do you have to be gone now?
We have two more that we definitely got to.
We'd like to do 2042 and 2332. If we can get those two done, then we can carry everything else.
Those are the, Mr. Chair, those are the ones that we do have the paperwork to be able to move at this point.
All right, should move fairly rapidly, unless I'm surprised.
2042 and 2332?
Correct.
2042 and 2332.
Okay. Crank it out.
We'll do so. Zach?
House Bill 2042 permits a person to provide the Department of Transportation with odometer disclosure for vehicles older than 10 years. It also has a subsequent to Ways and Means.
I hear a motion.
Mr. Chair, do we have amendments on this one? Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2042.
Chair Reed has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 2042. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2042 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2042 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is that discussion?
Sorry,
what was that?
As amended.
As amended. Okay. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I raised concerns at the last meeting. I'm not going to repeat them, but I'm still a no.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk call the roll.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Representative Weiser?
Yes.
Vice Chair Byer?
No.
Representative
Lindsay? I reserve the right to vote no on the floor, though, if I still have some questions to answer.
I'm sorry.
Yes, he votes yes.
Okay. Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Ban?
Aye. House Bill 2042 passes. Do we need a carry? No, we don't. With that, a closed work session on House Bill 2042 and open a work session on House Bill 2332.
House Bill 2332, as the committee adopted the amendment, now allows tow truck drivers to haul freight. Certain tow truck operators.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee. Do we need to suspend the rules to do this? Or?
No, just as amended too.
But do we need to do that?
No, we should.
This should
be a moment.
So do this or not?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee withdraw the subsequent referral to the Judiciary Committee.
And that's an independent motion?
Yes.
It's been moved that the committee withdraw the subsequent referral to Judiciary. That's on House Bill 2332. Is there discussion?
What was the reason for it to go to, or the thought process for even going to Judiciary?
The initial bill was regarding traffic fines for different vehicles.
Got it. Is there a discussion on the motion to withdraw the referral? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the referral is withdrawn. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2332 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2332 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2332.
Oops.
I'm sorry, you said it was amended, but we didn't address the amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was previously amended. Last committee hearing.
Mr. Chair, we amended the bill in our last meeting. Okay. That's my reference to as amended.
Are we ready? After that confusion, let's have the clerk call the roll.
Representative Lindsay?
Aye.
Representative
Nathanson? Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Weiner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye.
Chair Ban?
Aye. And we need a carrier. I'll carry it. Is that right? No, we don't. There's no subsequent referral.
Yes. Correct. We do need to carry.
I will carry. With that, motion passes, and I close the work session. Oops.
Work session's fine. Just don't adjourn yet.
I won't adjourn yet. Close the work session on 2332. All right.
You scared us, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Sorry, what was that?
Please go
ahead. Ease. Oh, standard ease. House Bill 3507, House Bill 2130, House Bill 3055, House Bill 2370, House Bill 2727, and House Bill 3591. We are going to, I guess we open a work session, is that right?
Yep.
Open a work session on House Bill 2524 so we can hear those who have been waiting so patiently. I hope they don't bill us for the time they spent here.
Indeed.
So, who do we have?
Tim Miller.
Again? Tim Miller and?
Dan Bates.
Mr. Bates. And am I correct, Zach, that this bill will have to be carried over because we don't have the paperwork yet, but
correct.
We can take the testimony today. Okay. Please, go ahead.
Chair Spence.
Oh, excuse me, first of all. Zach, what's the bill?
House Bill 2524 extends the sunsets for tax credits for use of alternative fuel vehicles and for construction of or installation of fueling stations.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Chair Vance, Chair Reed, members of the committee, you've previously heard a discussion on this bill. Dan Bates, for the record, I represent Ecotality and Revolt, two folks who are interested in the electric vehicle space. My purpose of in being before you today is the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments, which in trying to meet your desire to find appropriate sunsets for tax credits are two market-driven possibilities for when we believe the EV market may be mature enough to end a tax credit We would recommend the dash twos, which essentially would end the sunset for electric vehicles that are serviced by plug-ins. By the time that the new vehicle sales in Oregon are 5.5% of those new sales would be electric vehicles as the appropriate place for an ending of the sunset. The amendment would, I believe, keep the sunset underlying of 2018 unless that target is hit for electric vehicles. And that's my my statement. No. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Benz, Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Tim Miller. I'm the president and CEO of Greenlight Motors, which is a company developing a plug-in hybrid vehicle. But I'm also the president of the board of an organization called Drive Oregon, which is an electric vehicle and related industry association here in Oregon. And I'm here today to speak on behalf of 2524, specifically the Dash 2 amendments to it. Drive Oregon, again, is a group of over 40 companies and growing that are involved in this industry, and really our focus is to drive job creation in this industry. This group, Drive Oregon, has been selected by the Oregon Innovation Council because it's been recognized as a great economic development opportunity here in the state. But really what this is about and how it connects to this particular bill is that tax credits now are really an investment in the economic development opportunity of this industry. We've already been, basically adoption of these vehicles, people buying these vehicles here, will lead to economic development here in the state. Oregon has been recognized as a key launch state for these vehicles by many large manufacturers, from Nissan to Mitsubishi, recently by Ford. And by reports from Pike Research and by Rocky Mountain Institute and others, putting Oregon and Portland and other regions around the state as some of the top places where electric vehicles are going to be adopted in this country. Those things lead to job creation here in Oregon, not only to service these vehicles, but also to foster then the creation of companies that are developing our own vehicles here in Oregon, like my company and many others, and then those companies that create components that go into those vehicles, not just the components that go into the big OEM vehicles, but into the vehicles by these smaller startup companies. So we have a concerted effort here to drive this industry from the Oregon Innovation Council's work to work in the universities to other work across the state by many companies and investors. And so this effort to have tax credits so that people will buy these vehicles and address the major hurdle in buying these vehicles, which today is price point, is really a key part of this overall suite of activities to drive this industry forward and create jobs in Oregon. So this is not just about the environmental benefits of EVs. This is about economic development, job creation in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? After sitting there all afternoon, we should have some questions for you guys, but maybe it's all for the best if we don't. Nothing? Yes, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a short comment. I had a bill in a previous session about trying to provide incentives for consumers as well as manufacturers, because one of the critical points is if you don't have, you can encourage all the manufacturing you want. If no one's buying it yet, it doesn't work. You need to help the market. And we did have discussions at the time a couple of years ago about how do you know when an industry has gotten on its feet? Because one of the things I was proposing was phasing out the hybrid credit because it looked like that industry was now on its feet. And instead of, for lack of better words, giving away or incentivizing with more money, substituting what we had been investing in another industry to invest it in this new industry. And I'm just glad to hear the testimony today and glad that we in Oregon are still looking at this, not only just the big four, the big five manufacturers in Michigan that people talk about, but we can make things here too, and we can make the parts and other things that make these things go, not just the end stage assembly.
Co-chair Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Credit where credit is due, Representative Nathanson, that experience has informed, I think, thinking on this bill, but also on the two bills that we sent to the Revenue Committee earlier dealing with components of what will hopefully be formerly known as BETC, and the one that
remains. I don't think we do a good enough job defining what the end state should be when those credits or other incentives should end and be moved on to the next generation of technology. So thank you for helping us.
Further questions?
I just have one, and that is the 5.5. Was there some magic to it?
No, there is a PNNL, which is the Pacific Northwest National Lab estimate, which frankly the folks in Oregon think is a bit aggressive, that suggests that by 2020 you could see 5.4% of new car sales being these type of vehicles. The thought was 5.5 and in the sense as a round number, frankly, and it is not clear that the sales will be as aggressive as P&L has suggested, but that's the source of that.
How many is it? What's 5.5% is how many thousands of cars?
It is not clear how many new cars. I don't have the information on how many new car sales we have. There, I have seen estimates of around 500,000, and 5.5 of that, I believe, is about 26,000 cars.
Mm. Here. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much, and thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you,
Mr. Smith.
Thanks for the testimony. Thanks for your work. How do we anticipate, I want to try to be consistent with those that I have a knee-jerk like of and those that I have a knee-jerk question about, how do we imagine evaluating the effectiveness of this going forward and sort of the outcomes that it's providing to Oregon using this, to quote Representative Bence, the device?
Chair Bence, Chair Reed, Representative Smith. One response to that is I think, first off, we are, again, in a lead position as a state and as a region on adoption of EVs by multiple studies and by our position in the country. There are only six places in the country that are getting a huge investment from the federal government on charging stations, for example. Mm-hmm. So we're in the running among those six. By multiple other studies, we're in the running of a handful of other states that are driving the adoption of these this technology and this job creation. So one metric is, if we don't have any incentives for our consumers to buy these vehicles, we're going to very quickly lose that lead position. So if we're no longer one of the top states in driving this adoption, then we're going to have a hard time being one of the states where companies like mine and others can have this as an incubator market to sell into. As Representative Nathanson talked about, if nobody's buying these things, we're going to have a hard time creating jobs around them. So first, I would say a metric is, do we continue to be one of the top places where this is happening? And then second, of course, job creation numbers. And so in Drive Oregon, for example, we will be working very hard to measure the number of jobs we're creating in this industry, not only in the vehicles developed here, but in the components and the servicing and other companies throughout the value chain here in Oregon.
Follow up?
Yeah, I might understand answer the same question. We will have some general picture that we've got more, that we maintain some degree of lead position in this category. Anything else we can do as specifically as possible to evaluate this thing? Dan, either one of you.
Sure. Chair Bence, Chair Reed, Representative Smith, not that come immediately to mind, and one of the reasons I say that is right now the best indicator of how the market is doing is actual sales of electric vehicles. And it will be hard to tell, since it's still a nascent industry in Oregon. We're looking at maybe a banner year this year would be about 900 vehicles. It is still a little too early to see how that plays in downstream on this ecosystem in some kind of measurable way. A future discussion on what those metrics could look like based on impact, we may have a better assessment of what the ecosystem on this looks like. But I think one of the reasons it's hard to pinpoint additional metrics beyond vehicle sales is that we're still very early in the market.
But I would add, Chair Bence, Chair Reed, Representative Smith, again, there are very clear quantitative studies that put, for example, Oregon very high in adoption among hybrids first. And the city of Portland, for example, is very high, like ranked number one nationally. So we can aim to be ranked number one or in the top five nationally on adoption of this technology. That'll be a very clear indicator, very quantitative, very measurable, on whether we're ahead on this stuff and therefore creating the jobs that are at the lead of this transition.
Thank you very much. Thank you for staying around all this long afternoon. We appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to yes.
Vice Chair. There was someone in the back.
This is just a work session. Right? So,
okay.
We just got some paperwork, and before I lose any more of you, I want to call for the vote on another bill. So with that, I'm going to close the work session, and we're going to carry over House Bill 20. Let's see, Zach, which one did we just hear?
2524.
House Bill 2524, and I'm now going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2523.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2523 as amended to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved House Bill 2523 to the to Revenue without recommendation. Is there discussion?
And in addition, Mr. Chair, I forgot again that the motion should have also a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
With a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, and I think that is as amended. Is that right?
That's correct.
As amended. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none. House Bill 2523 passes to the Committee on Revenue with subsequent referral to Tax Credit Committee. All right. Zach, is there anything else that we need to do today?
Well, pass on 11 bills.
Yes.
Carried over seven.
Do we need to look at any of this stuff again?
I'm sorry?
Do we need to go through this list again?
I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. You are?
Yes, I am.
All right. Colleagues, thank you very much for all your hard work. With that, I'm going to close the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development.